Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it is a Wednesday morning. Great to be with you on a Wednesday and every day here at Catholic Connection. It's August 13th, 2025, and we have a dynamic show lined up for you today. Well, I like to think it happens every day, but in particular, some really interesting topics this morning. We have, after the news and weather, of course, on a Wednesday, we have Sister Betty Ann McNeil. She's an expert on St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. And, of course, her feast day is coming up at the end of the month. And we're also going to be talking about the 50th anniversary celebration of her canonization. Now, Sister Betty Ann is a member of the Daughters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul and a scholar whose work has been published around the world. She's an expert on the first American-born saint, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, and even edited the book about which we will be speaking, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, A Spiritual Portrait, the second edition of The Soul of Elizabeth Seton. So very excited to talk about this great saint. And of course, she did so much for Catholic education. And then for our Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, speaking of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, did you know that there is a very strong Italy connection with this wonderful saint? It has to do with her husband and has to do with northwestern Italy, and we will explain. Also has to do with the beautiful processions that take place all over Italy, especially on the Feast of Corpus Christi, and what happened when she was present during one of those processions and recognized, long before she became Catholic, that that was Jesus in the Eucharist. But the beauty of Italy also had an impact on her soul as well. We will discuss in Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, of course, a segment dedicated to my book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, which was published earlier this year by EWTN. And I would highly recommend you get a copy because it's a great guidebook, but it also has wonderful stories about the saints and wonderful stories just about life in Italy. And again, published earlier by EWTN earlier this year. Don't forget our Saints in Italy series based on the same book, shot on location in central Italy. It's a free series from our team at Mission Advancement. You can go to ewtn.com/saints in Italy. Very easy to sign up. Joan Lewis, speaking of Italy, will be joining us to wrap up our coverage on a Wednesday, the first hour of Catholic Connection, to talk about the Pope. And really warm, not only here in America, but around the globe and in Italy right now in Rome, topping, well, 100 degrees. Yeah. And that's the reason, as you'll hear in the news and more from Joan, as to why they moved the audience inside today. The audience is over now because, let's see, it's 9 o'clock here Eastern time, and there's 6 hours ahead of us, so it's at 3 o'clock. So the audience is usually in the morning around 9:30. But think about it, in terms of sitting in St. Peter's Square and being under the sun. No, it's actually dangerous. So that's why they moved it inside. But the beautiful thing is that the Pope, afterward, is someone who really wants to be with the people. And so he was walking through St. Peter's Basilica and the square, walking, well, at least on the Pope Mobile, actually, you know, greeting people. And what a wonderful thing for people who were there who couldn't get inside and who decided to brave the heat so they could get close to the Pope. So we'll discuss with Joan in the first hour of Catholic Connection. That is the first hour, a little bit more about the second hour later on in the program. Let's take a quick look at the weather for you this morning. We have heavy to excessive rainfall over the southern Appalachians that may bring areas of flooding. Gusty winds and low relative humidity will bring critical fire weather conditions to parts of the Great Basin and northern Rockies today and tomorrow. And then we have hot to extremely hot temperatures in place across parts of the western U.S. We do hope your Wednesday is going well so far. We appreciate your listenership here at EWTN's Global Catholic Radio. 4 minutes past the hour now. Let's check the news here on EWTN. Sorrow, if welcomed with sincerity, can be an opportunity for conversion and joy, for God never stops loving us. Pope Leo offering this comforting reminder during his general weekly audience today, his latest or last public event at the Vatican before departing for a few days at Castel Gandolfo later in the afternoon. The Holy Father observed reflecting on the betrayal experienced by Christ during his passion, adding that even at the darkest point, the light is not extinguished, but on the contrary, he says, it actually begins to shine. This is, he said, because if we recognize our limits, if we let ourselves be touched by the pain of our Lord, then we can finally be born again, since faith does not spare us in the possibility of sin, but always offers us a way out, and that's mercy. He said, Jesus is not scandalized by our fragility, for he knows well that no friendship is immune from the risk of betrayal. Due to the intense Roman heat, as we mentioned earlier, the audience took place inside the Vatican, Paul VI Hall, right next to St. Peter's. Regardless, the Holy Father still stopped over to greet faithful who were not able to fit into the hall and were inside in other locations nearby to stay out of the extreme heat. Meanwhile, the prefecture of the papal household announcing that the Pope will also be traveling to Albano, Italy on Sunday, August 17th. He'll celebrate Mass with the poor. At 9:30 a.m. local time, the Holy Father will arrive at the Shrine of Santa Maria della Rotonda in the beautiful town of Albano, a municipality located about 22 miles from the Vatican and bordering Castel Gandolfo, to celebrate Mass with a group of people who receive help from Caritas. And after Mass, he'll head to Castel Gandolfo to preside over the Angelus prayer at noon from Liberty Square. In addition to the Diocese of Albano, he will later share lunch with 100 low-income people. In other news this morning, the White House says nearly 24 arrests were made overnight by officers surging across Washington, D.C., the arrests coming hours after the president announced the nation's Capitol Police are being placed under federal control. He also activated hundreds of National Guards troops to help patrol D.C. streets. The emergency authority the president exercised under the D.C. Home Rule Act will expire, though, in 30 days, unless Congress approves an extension. President said his action could also be used as a model for the takeover of the U.S. cities with high crime rates, specifically mentioning Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, Baltimore, and Oakland during Monday's news conference. And Vladimir Putin will be the first, as Mark Mayfield tells us, Russian leader to visit Alaska when he meets with the president in Anchorage later this week.
Trump and Putin will hold their summit Friday at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, a giant military base with over 30,000 residents. That includes both Elmendorf Air Force Base and Fort Richardson Army Base. Alaska also plays a part in Russian history. The U.S. purchased the Alaskan territory from Russia over 150 years ago. At Friday's summit, Trump and Putin will discuss ending Russia's war in Ukraine, which Trump has said may include swapping some territory. I'm Mark Mayfield.
President Trump is set to speak virtually, meanwhile, with Ukrainian President Zelensky tomorrow. That's according to multiple reports, saying the call will also include Vice President Vance and European allies. It all comes before, as we mentioned, that Trump is set to meet with Vladimir Putin on Friday in Alaska as he works to end the fighting between the two countries. Zelensky, meanwhile, has said Ukraine won't give up any territory to Russia and will not give up trying to get NATO membership. Russia has demanded Ukraine give up land to reach a deal to end the war. Blake Shifton tells us talks are underway today in Egypt aimed at ending the conflict there between Israel and the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas.
Hamas has confirmed that its chief negotiator is in Cairo for talks this week aimed at reviving ceasefire negotiations with Israel after talks broke down last month. The Israeli offensive to seize Gaza City is expected to begin in October, and that looming operation is said to have created renewed urgency among ceasefire mediators to reach a breakthrough during the two-month window before Israel launches its assault. Prime Minister Netanyahu confirmed in an interview on Tuesday that he is now focused on a comprehensive deal with Hamas that includes the release of all remaining hostages. Blake Sifton, Tel Aviv.
Texas House Democrats have reportedly confirmed they intend to return to their state after fleeing in an attempt to halt legislative proceedings, which included GOP attempts to redraw congressional districts in the state. Multiple sources confirming to ABC 13 in Houston yesterday the absent House Democrats will return after feeling as if they accomplished their mission of killing the special legislative session called by Republicans to pass redistricting legislation. The special session expires next Tuesday. News of the lawmakers' imminent return to the state comes on the same day that Texas Senate Republicans were able to get the new congressional maps approved. They must now be passed in the House before Republican Governor Greg Abbott can sign them into law. The strategy by Texas Democrats to leave the state and abdicate their duties in an effort to stall Republican efforts is a strategy they have used before, as recently as 2021. Meanwhile, Chris Caraggio tells us the Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is now seeking to have former Congressman Beto O'Rourke arrested.
According to a legal filing, O'Rourke's Powered by People group continued to raise money to cover the expenses of Texas Democrats who fled the state after a judge temporarily blocked the group from soliciting money. Paxton is calling for a $500 fine for each act of contempt and for O'Rourke to be jailed. Texas Republicans are trying to put maximum pressure on Democrats to return to the state as the GOP looks to pass new maps ahead of 2026. I'm Chris Caraggio.
President Trump may soon get the interest rate cut he's been looking for from the Fed. That's because last month's inflation report is better than expected. White House Press Secretary Carolyn Leavitt celebrating that news at a press conference yesterday.
Today's CPI report revealed that inflation beat market expectations once again, and inflation remains stable.
The Labor Department showing the Consumer Price Index, a general measure of how much people are paying for goods and services, and a key inflation indicator, was up 0.2% from June. Many economists say the report should be evidence that the president's tariffs are not leading to a spike in inflation, and it's now safe to cut rates, possibly as soon as September. Firefighters are desperately trying to increase containment on the three wildfires burning in Rio Blanco County. The Lee Fire continues to burn at more than 120,000 acres and is only 4% contained. But Fire Incident Commander Jeremy Dietz says the crews are having some success still guarding against the flames jumping over a key state highway.
We are looking at areas of opportunity down here on the other side of Highway 13 if anything was to go. So we're doing our scouting down towards Rifle Gap. So getting folks out ahead of this.
The Elk Fire burning 14,500 acres, 30% contained. The Crow Fire burning near the Rio Blanco Route County line is now at 300 acres and is 0% contained. Alaska's governor is issuing a state disaster declaration over what he fears could be coming as catastrophic flooding from what's known as a glacial outburst. It marks the third straight year of serious glacier-related flooding in the capital city of Juneau, population around 30,000. And the cleanup continuing following severe storms in the Chicago area. Heavy rain moving through the city yesterday, and storms developed into the night. Several suburban homes were flooded. There was also high standing water on the city's south side, with some streets taking on 4 to 6 inches of water, especially in areas with poor drainage systems. Right now, though, it's still unclear if Tropical Storm Erin will affect the East Coast. The National Hurricane Center saying yesterday afternoon Erin was about 950 miles west of the Cabo Verde Islands, with topping winds near 45 miles an hour. Forecasters expect the storm to become a hurricane over the central tropical Atlantic in the next couple of days. Now, the storm could reach the northern Leeward Islands over the weekend. The Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico may also be in its path. And Michael Kastner tells us a former security guard is facing charges for allegedly threatening Little League International and ESPN.
Police in South Williamsport, Pennsylvania say 20-year-old Isaiah Randall texted his supervisor, "You better have heavy security," and "I will be back," after he was fired by a private security firm at Little League headquarters. Randall then reportedly posted a countdown timer called Mass Casualty Event on social media and tagged ESPN, Little League, and his former employer. Authorities said Randall's actions caused the Little League World Series to divert from normal operations. I'm Michael Kastner.
We're so glad you're tuned in to EWTN's Global Catholic Radio and their production of this program, Catholic Connection, Monday through Friday here on the network. We have a great show lined up for you today. We try to do that every single day, of course. Work really hard at keeping you connected to the church and beyond, hence the name of the program. Really looking forward to having a discussion about a wonderful saint. We are going to be talking about St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. Not only is her feast day coming up at the end of the month, but also the 50th anniversary of her canonization. And there's a newly released book from our friends at Ignatius Press, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, A Spiritual Portrait, second edition of The Soul of Elizabeth Ann Seton. And the editor is going to be with us this morning about that book. Let the saints come marching in. We are so blessed in the one holy Catholic and apostolic faith to have so many amazing saints to whom we can look up and admire and call on their intercession, including the great Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton. And we're going to talk about her today. There's so much to discuss because her feast day is coming up. There's the 50th anniversary, also a big celebration that's planned. We'll give you all the details. On the phone with us is Sister Betty Ann McNeil. She's a member of the Daughters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul and a scholar whose work has been published around the world, an expert on the first American-born saint, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. She also edited, as I mentioned earlier, Father Joseph Durvin's classic, The Soul of Elizabeth Ann Seton, and also wrote the introduction, and I'm holding this book from Ignatius in my hand. Sister, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. It's delightful. Thank you.
So let's talk first of all. There's so much to say about this great saint, but we have her feast day coming up. But let's start with the big celebration in terms of the 50th anniversary that's going to be going on. If you could share some of the great details about that.
Well, the 50th anniversary of the canonization of the first native-born American saint is the weekend of September 13th and 14th at the National Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton in Emmitsburg, Maryland, which is between Baltimore and Washington, and Gettysburg, just around the corner. It will include Eucharistic celebrations by the Archbishop of Baltimore, the Superior General of the Congregation of the Mission coming from Rome. There will be music festivals, concerts outside on the lawns of the Holy Grounds, as well as living history programs all over in the historic houses where she lived, opened her school, and where she died. It's a family event, and there's something for everyone. And there is no entrance charge, and food trucks will be around the campus.
What's the best place, Sister, do you think, for people to go for information on the festival, first of all, the celebration?
The best place is the SetonShrine.org, the website of the National Shrine of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton.
Sister, Oh, sure. Go ahead. I just had a question about when you first got interested in this amazing saint. What sparked your interest?
I read a biography about her when I was a youngster, and her father called her Betty, and my name is Betty Ann, and she lived by the seashore, and I lived by the beach of the Atlantic Ocean. So we shared a lot in common, including Episcopal roots and beachcombing. I didn't inherit her musical skills, but she's a woman whom I've grown to know and love over the years. And like all saints, she has become my personal model and intercessor, which is what saints are. And we're thrilled to be celebrating the 50th anniversary of her canonization. I was in Rome for the canonization in 1975. But we celebrate her feast day on January 4th, which is the day that she died.
In terms of her life and her work, what is it, do you think, that people need to know? What do you think is most important? Her education, contributions, her conversion to Catholicism because the Eucharist had such an impact on her. What would you like people to know?
I think the most important thing to know is that she's not a plastic statue. She was a woman, a human woman who knew the pain of loss and grief, who knew love, carried and birthed five children. She knew the pain of losing a spouse as well as two children. And she struggled with poverty at one point, but followed God's call in her life. She relied on divine providence, and she saw the invitation to come to Baltimore as an intervention of divine providence. And that's where she opened her first school, and where the idea came of establishing the Sisters of Charity, the first Native American community founded in the United States, the Sisters of Charity of St. Joseph. So I think the most important thing is she's a woman who lived and breathed and shared the Word of God, and she's a woman who was a daughter of the Church, loved the Eucharist, was nourished by it, and had a close bond with Mary, the Mother of God, as a mother and also as a sorrowful mother. So there's something in Elizabeth Seton for everyone. Even as an adolescent, she went through a period of adolescent depression and was tempted to do a drug overdose, but chose not to. Elizabeth Seton is relatable. She's relevant to modern men and women around the globe. Even she called herself a citizen of the world.
Wow. Talking with Sister Betty Ann McNeil, a member of the Daughters of Charity of St. Vincent de Paul and a scholar whose work has been published around the world. Of course, an expert on the first American-born saint, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. Let's talk a little bit about her devotion to the Eucharist. Well, first I want to ask you about, if we have time, we have about 4 minutes left, but quickly, in terms of her coming into the Catholic Church, that cost her a lot of relationships and pain, did it not?
It did. And it was providential that when she was in Italy, because of her husband's health and his ultimate death, she was befriended by a very prominent Italian family who were educated in the faith. And in being hospitable, they took her around to the sites of in Livorno and Firenze, Florence, and what is there to see? But churches. So she experienced the liturgy, the mystique of the liturgy, and she began asking questions out of curiosity. Why do Catholics do this? Then out of real interest and for clarification. So it was in Italy that she met the faith and began to realize this is the true faith, and Jesus is truly present in the Eucharist. The real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist was very important to her. And when she came back to New York, when she returned, she had a Catholic heart and intended to convert, but met such opposition that she didn't. But she studied, and she consulted, and she read books, and went through about an 18-month discernment process that was very emotional and distressing and trying. And ultimately, she just said, put her foot down and said, I believe the Catholic Church is the true church of apostolic succession, and I'm seeking truth, and I will go there, I believe, and I'm going to be a Catholic and try to be a good one. And indeed, she did. So after conversion, family and friends rejected her, and there was anti-Catholic bigotry, and she had difficulty getting a job. And the rest is history. The hand of God led Father William Dubourg, a Sulpician who was traveling to stop in New York while he was en route to Boston, and he met Elizabeth Staten, heard her story, and saw the opportunity to invite her to Maryland to start a school for girls, which he wanted. And this one thing led to another. Divine providence paved the way, and Elizabeth Seton saw God's plan unfolding and accepted God's will. That was very important in her life.
It's so beautiful, though, because that time that she spent when she couldn't, she struggled in joining the church because of all the opposition. She didn't just, you know, whine. She made something of that. She studied. She read books, as you said. She investigated the church even further. So that, in itself, I mean, that strengthened her because it just, I think, affirmed her interest and her efforts regarding the Catholic Church.
She was a woman of conviction and a woman of her word. And she lived the word of God as she saw it, as it unfolded. And she shared it. She wanted to prepare her students, the girls in St. Joseph's School, for the world in which they were destined to live.
Final comment, Sister, as we wrap up, have about a minute left. Why would you encourage people not only to get a copy of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, A Spiritual Portrait, for which she wrote the introduction, but why should we learn more about her and call on her intercession, do you think?
Elizabeth Seton is a woman, a friend in heaven, who can intercede for anybody who has who is seeking grace, seeking favors. And the beauty of the book is it unfolds, it's not a biography, it unfolds her spiritual development along the path of her life. And it shows her growth and her maturation in the faith so that she truly became a disciple and a holy woman, a woman of virtue.
Sister, thank you so much. Beautiful insights. You are indeed an expert, and we so appreciate your knowledge about this beautiful saint, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton. And, of course, grab a copy of St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, A Spiritual Portrait, from our friends at Ignatius. We'll be right back. The Elizabeth Ann Seton Italian Connection. Maybe you didn't know this. It's a great story about how, as you heard Sister Betty Ann McNeil mention, by the way, I misspoke. The Saints' Feast Day is in January, not at the end of the month. For some reason, I thought it was at the end of August. I was thinking probably of the festival that's coming up, which you should check out, by the way, with the Archdiocese of Baltimore and the Shrine, because it's going to be amazing celebrating her 50th anniversary of her canonization. Again, a reminder about the book, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, A Spiritual Portrait. So this is the time on Wednesdays that we do Shrines and Wonders Wednesdays, and this comes from my new EWTN book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, Discovering Sacred Spaces, Fascinating Places, and Destinations Off the Beaten Path. Now, Italy offers certainly enough about the saints because there are so many saints that were born, raised, come from the beautiful boot, Italia, Bella Italia. But in addition, there are also saints who visited there and had incredible experiences or maybe relocated to the country of Italy or had that experience, as you just heard Sister say, and then took that back to the United States to do something big with it. So what is the Italian connection with this beautiful saint, St. Elizabeth Ann Seton? Okay. So her husband was a New York import-export businessman, William Seton, okay? And he had fallen on hard times, went bankrupt back in 1800, and became seriously ill in the year 1803. Later that year, the couple took their daughter, Anina, and traveled to Livorno, the port city of the Ligurian Sea. If you're looking at the map of Italy, it would be on your northwest. Okay, now Liguria is associated with many, many beautiful spots along the coast that are very popular with travelers and tourists. Of course, Livorno is a very nice city. Not too far from there, you also have Cinque Terre, the Five Lands. You have Pisa, which is technically in Tuscany, but that whole area, Liguria, Tuscany. Tuscany has quite the coastline. A lot of people don't know that, but there's a great, beautiful coastline in Tuscany as well. But Liguria is in a class in its own. You have Porto Venere, which is another beautiful city. It's called the Land of the Poets. And so that area, again, is gorgeous. So it's on the western edge of Tuscany, and hoping to, of course, help her husband by putting him in a different environment, the pure, clean sea air. They were hoping it might affect a cure for his tuberculosis. He was quarantined for a month on an island because of an outbreak of yellow fever in New York. They eventually were allowed to disembark. Sadly, within 38 days, he succumbed to the disease, died 2 days after Christmas, and was buried in the local English cemetery there. The crushed young widow and her daughter had nowhere to turn other than the arms of their wealthy Italian hosts. They received more than they ever could imagine. 8-year-old Anita remarked once, "Oh, Mama, how many friends God has provided for us in this strange land, for they are our friends before they know us." Born and bred an Episcopalian, she found herself very moved by their devout Catholic faith, and the seeds of conversion to Catholicism were sown wide and deep with spiritual practices and apologetics presented in the form the widow Seton would understand. But the intense devotion of the family, and listen to this, in the presence of the Blessed Sacrament, touched her most profoundly and fortified her commitment to Catholicism. She returned to New York in early spring, 1804, and in mid-January of 1805, as you heard Sister say, in terms of really taking some time to study and to dig in her heels and to try to push back against the persecution she received for wanting to become Catholic, she asked to be received into the Catholic Church at St. Peter's on Barclay Street. Now, the area in which she spent so much time in northern Italy is just, again, very lovely. Now, unfortunately, some parts have been taken over by social media influencers, and I would not advise going to Cinque Terre unless you go in the way off season because it's just so crowded and overrun. But still, the coastline and the scenery there is just absolutely breathtaking. And the sea air is phenomenal along the coast. All the coast of Italy, Italy has so much coastline. But think about where she was located. Liguria and also Tuscany. And you heard Sister say that she spent time in many of the churches. And so when you're in Tuscany, you're very close. Obviously, you're right there with Florence. And many people, when they're spending time in Florence, do go up to the coast. And they will go to Cinque Terre and other places along the coastline. Pisa, for example, because it's just convenient. It's very easy to do a tour from there. But let's just start with Florence. You think about the Duomo. You think about Santa Croce. You think about the David, right? And the museums there. And nonstop religious art everywhere. But most importantly, she was moved by the family's devotion to the Eucharist. And one thing that, among the many things that Italy does so well, especially on the Feast of Corpus Christi, is they celebrate the Eucharist like no other country, and I've been all over the world. There are festivals, there are processions, there are beautiful dedications to Jesus, body, blood, soul, and divinity, wherever you are in Italy. Now, in my region of Umbria, where we live part-time, it's famous, for example, in Orvieto, and where the Eucharistic miracle of Corpus Christi is housed, of course, but also in the beautiful Umbrian town next to Assisi of Spella, where they just line the streets with these beautiful images, all made of flowers, by the local people that are on the ground, images of Jesus, images of a monstrance, images of Moses, images of the Bible, just to give you the sense of the beauty of the Catholic faith. She was there when there was a particular Eucharistic procession, and when she witnessed the monstrance being brought through the streets, she hit the ground on her knees. Not really at that time fully understanding what she was witnessing or whom, she felt it. She knew there was something special about what the Catholics were doing, what they were celebrating, and what they were lifting high. And so, as you heard Sister say, she came back to the United States, and because of that experience, because of the dedication of the Italian family who embraced her, who took her to the beautiful sites, in addition to, obviously, her immediate love of the Eucharist, it was the love of the Italian people and also the beauty of Italy that spoke to her about God and Catholicism. Because even if you're just looking at nature in Italy, which would be enough for a tour because it's so phenomenal, when you are there and you have nature as a backdrop, and then you have these amazing basilicas and churches and cathedrals everywhere, I don't care if you're in a small town, a big town, and when the whole town is still built around the church, the piazza, the Duomo there, right? That's the main center. That's the main area where people still gather today for their passeggiata, the evening walk. It does something to you. If you don't feel moved by what you see in a place like Italy or, let's say, Poland or Spain, where there's so many incredible churches and the lives of so many incredible saints, then you need to check your pulse. Because if you are open to God, then beauty leads us to goodness, and that leads us to truth, as Bishop Barron says, and as I say in the opening introduction of my book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders. The shrines of Italy were a wonder for a great saint, Saint Elizabeth Ann Seton. That experience, God providing that beauty and that sense of truth for her, as seen in the cathedrals and the Eucharistic processions and the love of an Italian Catholic family, led her to come back to her homeland, the United States of America, and become not just a Catholic, but an amazing Catholic saint who will be felt, her influence will be felt forever in so many ways. That's our Italy Shrines and Wonders segment. Check out the book, Italy Shrines and Wonders, from EW10, and also our Saints series, EW10.com/Saints in Italy. Minutes past the hour on a Wednesday. Speaking of Italy, we head back to the boot with my dear sister in Christ, Joni Jones-Rome, of course. And I don't need to ask you how hot it is. I've been monitoring the situation because we head back to the motherland at the end of the month, and we're looking at our area in Umbria, and it's about the same that it is down in Rome. It's topping 100 degrees. How are things there, though? How are you holding up?
Well, I haven't gone out that much simply because of my dental issue. A broken, therefore missing tooth. Been spending a lot of time trying to find doctors, etc. And I mean, Teresa, anybody who's listening who has lived in Italy, or well, even if you're just a guest in Italy, you wouldn't know this. But if Italy in August is not just heat, Italy in August means vacation. Mm-hmm. And the closer you are to the 15th, the Feast of the Assumption, right, and the several days before and after, you do not want any emergency in your life,
right,
like
mm-hmm.
Joan needing a dentist to replace a broken tooth, yeah, like plumbing or anything else. So you do what you can. But
right.
I mean, you know, I went to a dentist today, spent several hours there this morning. My next appointment, because of vacations, cannot be until the 28th. That's 2 weeks from tomorrow.
Yeah.
So In any event, some people are doing well. The Holy Father, as you know, had the audience today because of the heat. I don't remember the last time this happened. Because of the heat, the audience, the general, weekly general audience, was moved into the Paul the Sixth Hall. Mm-hmm. So you had the hall and then probably the, atrium area. The Pope spoke to people there. Then he went to St. Peter's Basilica, and people could watch from, if you happen to be in St. Peter's Square, you could see everything on the big screens.
Right.
But the Pope went to the Basilica where there were lots of people. And then a thing from the Vatican press office said he was also outside in the parking area. And I think what they mean is there's a parking area right off of the Paul VI Hall mm-hmm. for anybody who mm-hmm. lives or works yep. in the yep. Vatican, like the Holy Father, because he's in... He's living in the building adjacent to the hall. So, he knows that area. And by the way, in 50 minutes, the Holy Father will be leaving the Vatican by car to go to Castel Gandolfo, where typically it's enough degrees cooler that you can finally be comfortable. But he was originally scheduled just to be there 3 days, but now he's going today, which is the 13th. And he will be back the afternoon or early evening of the 19th. So I'm glad he's getting that quality time. It's something like 2 or 3 days longer than they had planned. But so his last Vatican thing for 6 days was the audience. And then on Friday, which is Ferragosto, I can't think, and I think I almost want to say Christmas. No, I will say Christmas, but maybe only Easter is bigger than Ferragosto, mm-hmm. the Feast of the Assumption.
Right.
And it's been that way for so, so long. For example, Vatican holidays, Vatican employees have off the 14th, 15th, and 16th. Sunday, of course, is a Sunday, so they have that mm-hmm. off as well. But it really is a very big time here, vacation time. And right now, I can't tell you how many stores. If you go between my house and like Home Baked and that tunnel that goes across the river yep. or to the river, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can't tell you how many stores are closed, and they will be closed for the next 2.5 or 3 weeks. Coffee bars, really touristy places, will generally be open, but mm-hmm. a lot of restaurants closed, pharmacies, your dry cleaners, stores, it's just phenomenal what closes. And offices, lawyers, doctors. And when they go away, they'll go away for 3 to 4 weeks.
Right.
Something. We can't imagine that,
right.
In our country.
But, now, my pastor wrote an article. I talked about this last week in my last segment of Italy's Shrines and Wonders. He studied, of course, in Rome and was at the NAC, and he says he misses, the Raposo. He misses the shutdown. He talked about Ferragosto. He talked about the whole month of August, that they don't just take the time off for the feast, but they make it a whole event. Now, obviously, it goes back, the whole celebration of August goes back in time before the Assumption to Caesar. But then, of course, thanks be to God, the church came along, and we have this beautiful celebration connected to Mary, and the festivals are amazing. But he said there's nothing like it, and he misses the thing
really?
Slowing down. And he said Americans just would not know what to do.
Exactly.
And he wasn't encouraging people to take a month off. He was just saying that even now, people in America won't take a longer vacation. They'll just take 2 or 3 days. And he says, you really need to, even if you don't want to spend the money to slow down and embrace il dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing, we really need to do that. And even though it can be frustrating if you're traveling there during August, it's nice to kind of get into the flow of things when you're in a foreign country, especially in Italy, and embrace their habits, embrace their traditions, as opposed
exactly.
to fighting them. Right?
Well, and Teresa, if you're coming, as a visitor, a pilgrim for the whole year, very little is going to change in your program, because the things that have been laid out for you on your itinerary, the various tours, it can be secular, so, Roman Colosseum and everything, or obviously churches, basilicas, et cetera, those are all going to be open. And it might be somebody said, go to this restaurant, and right. and you find it closed. But other than that, your time here as a tourist, as a pilgrim, very little will change about things, being open or not open. Maybe your favorite store might not be open. But anyway, you can adjust to that. So But you know, you're right. It's called Ferragosto. Mm-hmm. Everybody here knows it's August 15th. And it comes from the Latin Feria di Agosto. Mm-hmm. And this is when, mainly because of the weather, things were shut down. And the emperors would sponsor games, maybe for a month. And it would be in this month of the year. And they were known as August holidays because people were exempt from work so that they could attend the emperor's games. But anyway, as you said, thankfully over the years, it's now this beautiful Catholic feast of the Assumption. And there isn't anybody in Italy that can't tell you when the Feast of the Assumption is. Mm-hmm. I wonder if we did the same poll in America, would people
if
know?
They would know. Yeah. It's interesting because I've been receiving all these great WhatsApp messages from our neighbors in our little town in Umbria, and the celebrations that they're doing, even in our little village in the center of, in the middle of the country near Assisi, they're doing so many wonderful events, related to the church and little things outside and processions and whatnot. And then what's so beautiful, I think, of course, the Italians are experts at this as well, but the fireworks are everywhere. Just so amazing. So amazing.
I know. It is just wonderful. And then the town where I'd want to be this weekend, if I could, would be Castel Gandolfo. Mm-hmm. Just because I've been there. I love it.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful, small,
so
peaceful, historical.
Yeah.
And, of course, now has a Pope in residence, a part-time residence. But, no, he'll be busy on Friday. He'll celebrate Mass at 10 in the Church of San Tommaso in Castel Gandolfo. And then on the 17th, he's going to say Mass in a church in Albano, which is not, mm-hmm. Far away. It's one of the Roman hill towns. And then after that, he'll be back at Castel Gandolfo for the Angelus, after which he's receiving a number of people for lunch, people experiencing, I think the Vatican Bulletin said, experiencing poverty, so about 100 people. So that'll be nice. We'll look forward to hearing that report and seeing those pictures. So, and then
I'm really hoping, Joni, that his presence at Castel Gandolfo, which is such an incredible town itself, it will interest more people who visit Italy. I'm trying to encourage them. I've got a friend who's spending some time in Rome in September, and she's been there before. She's looking for different things to do. And I said, you really should go to the hill country, to the hill towns. In addition to Albano, you have, of course, Castel Gandolfo, but then you have what I love. Another town I love is Frascati, which is just so pretty and has wonderful white wine, and they're well known for their porchetta. There, and it's just, you could just pick a town and just park and stroll through, but it's just so pretty, and it's cooler than Rome, because it's it is a hill country. It's up in the hills, so it's not going to be
much
cooler, but a little bit.
I mean, forested area, but Teresa, what we were talking about a minute ago, needing a vacation, taking time off, having a change of scenery, if nothing else. Mm-hmm. What I love about these hill towns, what I know you do too, is the fact that they are so small.
Yes.
That the word frenetic or frantic pace of life, mm-hmm. it just doesn't exist. And you find yourself slowing down. And
it's like your blood pressure just drops. I'm serious.
Yeah.
If you could feel it almost.
Exactly. No, it's just the word relax takes on a new meaning. When you realize your whole body, not just your mind, your whole body is, giving in to this slower pace, to watching people walk, not run from mm-hmm. point A to point B, to sit for, 2 hours, hour and three quarters, 2 hours over a single glass of wine.
Yep.
Of course,
the
if there's
aperitivo.
Two people, you'll split mm-hmm. a bottle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it's just there. People come, in any month out of the year, but obviously, I would say spring, summer, and fall for something like Castel Gandolfo to experience the full beauty, sit on a terrace, overlook the lake, mm-hmm. have a fantastic lunch, and a glass of the local white wine, which is just out of this world.
Amazing. Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so inexpensive, so affordable, but so good. Even the house wine, if you ask for, you know, the house wine, and you get, let's say, a Vino Bianco, their Vino Bianco or their Vino Rosso, it's not going to be bad wine because they take a lot of pride in their products, and it'll be something that they've made or something that, you know, they get from a local winery. It's just an incredible experience. And even if you do get frustrated, I know if you're going in August, there's a lot of crowds as well in certain areas, but keep that in mind. Think about the heat, make plans ahead of time, but just slow down. And that's what it's all about, right?
And also, I think
taking in the history of as Catholics, in addition to Il Dolce Far Niente, understanding what they're celebrating, what we're celebrating for the Assumption.
Exactly. But I have to say that in these days of extreme heat, I mean, the government has certain advisories, and it's like, you know, if for any reason you could do it, you wouldn't want to leave your house between like 9:30 in the morning and 6 at night or 6:30. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you have to. But take it easy. Walk slowly. Oh, my gosh. Stay on the shady side of the street. drink plenty of water. Drinks like that, but just relax. Just know that unless you have to catch a plane, you don't have to be anywhere, and you know, on that kind of time.
Just enjoy it. There's so much to take in when you sit down at a cafe or a wine bar, and you're having your aperitivo, your prosecco or your aperol spritz, or maybe just a coffee. Just slow down and take it in. And also think about the beauty. I was just talking about the connection between St. Elizabeth Ann Seton and Italy, that it was a beauty in the Eucharist when she was in Italy, in northern Italy, in Liguria, that really spoke to her heart. Well, we've got to run. Went by so fast. Look forward to talking with you, God willing, next week. And I imagine you're going to have all kinds of great stuff on your blog, Joan's Rome, and we'll check it out because so much going on during Ferragosto, of course, the Feast of the Assumption coming up this week. And Father Mitch is going to be talking about that tomorrow, and we'll tell you more about that.
Sure.
Coming up. All right, my dear. Well, you take care.
Well, God
stay
bless
cool.
You all. You're in my prayers.
And stay cool. Appreciate your updates. And yeah, send us some pictures. Put them up on your blog. Really appreciate it. Of course, Joan Lewis with us every Wednesday for our Joan's Rome connection to Rome. And she's been there for over 40 years, and she is an expert on Rome. That's why I had her endorse my book, which she says she really liked. Anyway, we'll be right back to let you know what's coming up in the second hour of Catholic Connection on a Wednesday, August 13th. You are listening to the one, the only, EWTN. Stay tuned. It's 55 minutes past the hour. It's a Wednesday. We appreciate your listenership here on EWTN's Global Catholic Radio. Coming up in the second hour of CC with TT on EWTN Radio Extra, we will have a dynamo with us, and he's so energetic, probably because he exercises so much. He has a lot of adrenaline going through his veins and his bones. It's Dr. Patrick Castle, president and founder of the wonderful Relay for Pro-Life, and he's just incredible. I've interviewed him, I think, almost every year I've been covering the March for Life for EWTN, and he is such a joy. He is so in love with the Lord, he's so in love with the faith, and he's so on fire for the beautiful teachings of life from womb to tomb. So we'll find out about the Relay for Pro-Life, which is actually coming up in a few weeks, and he'll give us all the details. And we're going to get his story on why he founded this wonderful organization of runners and walkers. And what's really cool about the Relay for Life and being a pro-life runner with him is you don't have to run. Let's say, I mean, a lot of people have been running for years. I mean, Dominic was running for years and then had to go to walking because the knees, you know, gave out after a little while. I mean, not too badly, but to the point where the doctors are saying, yeah, do some other exercise, because it does take its toll. But you can do other kinds of exercise. You can walk, you can stroll, whatever, just get moving for life. So it's a beautiful thing, and we'll discuss with Dr. Patrick Castle. We'll have two segments with him. And then 2 cents I want to talk about slowing down again. So you've got one area where you're moving, but the importance of also slowing down. Il dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing. We'll be right back.
Well,
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
Hope your Wednesday is going well. It's August 13th, 2025. Thank you for tuning in to the second hour of this program produced by EWTN. As you just heard, we are on EWTN's Radio Extra channel. Appreciate those of you listening to the second hour. And, of course, tuning in online or on your app. So excited about our guest today. We are going to have two segments with this dynamo, Dr. Patrick Castle, who is a bundle of energy. He is a president and founder of Life Runners, and he's going to be talking about the ACROSS American Relay for Pro-Life. It's a very cool event. It's coming up in a couple of weeks, I think about 3 weeks, actually. And what's cool about it is even though he represents pro-life, you know, runners, you don't have to be a runner to be involved, and he'll explain that coming up. But really, the story behind this ministry that he founded, why he did it, and the impact it has had across the country. And these folks run and walk across the country for the relay in all kinds of areas, some that are sensitive and appreciative of the pro-life message, others who are antagonistic. And in this climate right now, who knows what could happen in terms of maybe someone, God forbid, possibly taking it even further. So we'll talk about, you know, how they keep up their strength, both physically and emotionally, and what it means to be one of the runners or walkers in the, of course, pro-life runners group that he started. Dr. Patrick Castle joining us. Now, in two cents this morning, I was going to do something else, but I decided after talking to Joni in the first hour of our program for our segment with her on Joan's Rome that we've been doing for years. She was talking about Ferragosto. All right, that's the Feast of the Assumption in Italy. That's what they call it. Now, the whole Ferragosto, though, has a big history. The biggest thing, though, I want to discuss is, you know, something I mentioned that my pastor said in a recent column of his, talking about the ability to slow down. It's so difficult for us, all of us, because we have busy lives. If you have children, especially, if you're still working, or even if you have grandchildren, there's a lot you want to do. We're all busy. But one thing that Deacon Dom and I have learned to embrace is il dolce far niente. And the peace that comes with that, the sweetness of doing nothing. And it really is doing something. And people try to get their heads around that. And in America, we're just not good at it. And I have to say that when I come back to the United States after being in Italy for a couple months, it's really hard to adjust because you feel like, oh my gosh, you're just like overwhelmed with, first of all, the noise and the busyness. And of course, we live in a very large area in southeastern Michigan, Metro Detroit, which has over 4 million people. It's a lovely area. And I grew up here. I was born on the East Coast, another busy area, New York and Jersey area, and then came to Michigan with my family when my father was transferred. And so I've always been around big cities. And I guess I was never even conscious of how high strung we all are and what it feels like when you're on this treadmill. For example, the other day on Monday, Deacon Dom and I were heading across town for a meeting at Corporate Travel. And the construction, I'm sure it's in your area as well. The construction in the summertime, it's like those orange cones are our state flowers, right? And it took us over an hour to get home for normally like a 20-minute ride because of the construction. And it was the middle of the day, it was after the show we went, and I'm like, are you kidding me? It's 2 o'clock, 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and there's this much traffic? And I kept longing for the hills of Umbria and the peace. But we'll discuss the importance of what that does to our soul. What does Scripture say about slowing down? And why, really, we should take advantage of it now before the school season begins. I know there's a lot of kids back in school, but mostly kids will be starting Labor Day weekend. And then all the busyness begins, right? With the extracurricular activities, the sports and whatnot. Take a breath, enjoy this month, and enjoy Ferragosto, Italian style. That's coming up on Two Cents. And of course, as I mentioned, Dr. Patrick Castle will be joining us to talk about the Life Runners. Let's take a look at the forecast and see what's happening across the country weather-wise. Looks like the rain may force us to slow down because there's a lot of it coming up. Heavy rain to excessive rainfall over the southern Appalachians, bringing areas of flooding. Gusty winds and low relative humidity will bring critical fire weather conditions to part of the Great Basin and northern Rockies today and tomorrow. And hot to extremely hot temperatures are in place through today across parts of the western U.S. This is Catholic Connection, an EWTN production, and this is our EWTN Radio Extra channel. Right now, it is 4 minutes past the hour and time to check the news on EWTN's Radio Extra. Well, the Pope says sorrow, if welcomed with sincerity, can be an opportunity for conversion and joy. For God, he says, never stops loving us. Pope Leo offering this comforting reminder during his weekly general audience today, his last public event in the Vatican before departing for a few days at Castel Gandolfo later in the afternoon. The Holy Father reflected on the betrayal experienced by Christ during his passion and said that even at the darkest point, the light is never extinguished, but on the contrary, begins to shine. This is, Pope Leo said, because if we recognize our limit, if we allow ourselves to be touched by the pain of the Lord, then we can finally be born again. Since faith, he says, does not spare us from the possibility of sin, but always offers us a way out, and that is mercy. He also said that Jesus is not scandalized by our fragility. He knows well that no friendship is immune from the risk of betrayal. Due to the intense Roman heat, meanwhile, the audience took place inside the Vatican's Paul VI Hall. Regardless, the Holy Father still stopped over to greet the faithful who were not able to fit into the hall and were instead located in other places nearby to stay out of the extreme heat. Meanwhile, the Vatican says that the Pope will be traveling to Albano, Italy this Sunday. You heard Joan mention that earlier, to celebrate Mass with the poor. At 9:30 a.m. local time, the Holy Father will arrive at the Shrine of Santa Maria della Rotondo in Albano. And that's a beautiful, beautiful area, as we mentioned earlier, about 22 miles outside of Rome, just south of Rome, from the Vatican and bordering Castel Gandolfo, to celebrate Mass with a group of people who receive assistance from Caritas. And after the Mass, he will head to Castel Gandolfo, presiding over the Angelus, and then he will later lunch with 100 low-income people. In other news this morning, the White House says nearly two dozen arrests were made last night by officers surging across Washington, D.C. Those arrests coming hours after the president announced D.C.'s police are being placed under federal control. He also activated hundreds of National Guard troops to help patrol D.C. streets. The emergency authority the president exercised under the D.C. Home Rule, though, expires in 30 days unless Congress approves an extension. The president saying his action could be used as a model for the takeover of other U.S. cities with high crime rates, specifically mentioning Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, Baltimore, and Oakland during the news conference earlier this week. Meanwhile, as Mark Mayfield tells us, Vladimir Putin will be the first Russian leader to visit Alaska when he meets with President Trump in Anchorage this week.
Trump and Putin will hold their summit Friday at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson, a giant military base with over 30,000 residents that includes both Elmendorf Air Force Base and Fort Richardson Army Base. Alaska also plays a part in Russian history. The U.S. purchased the Alaskan territory from Russia over 150 years ago. At Friday's summit, Trump and Putin will discuss ending Russia's war in Ukraine, which Trump has said may include swapping some territory. I'm Mark Mayfield.
President Trump, meanwhile, set to speak virtually with Ukrainian President Zelensky. That will happen tomorrow. That, according to multiple reports, which said the call would also include Vice President Vance as well as European allies. This, again, all coming before he is set to meet with Putin on Friday in Alaska as he works to end the fighting between the two countries. Zelensky has said Ukraine won't give up any territory to Russia and will not give up trying to gain NATO membership. Russia has demanded, meanwhile, Ukraine give up land to reach a deal to end the war. Blake Sifton reports talks are underway in Egypt aimed at ending the conflict, meanwhile, between Israel and the Palestinian terrorist group Hamas.
Hamas has confirmed that its chief negotiator is in Cairo for talks this week aimed at reviving ceasefire negotiations with Israel after talks broke down last month. The Israeli offensive to seize Gaza City is expected to begin in October, and that looming operation is said to have created renewed urgency among ceasefire mediators to reach a breakthrough during the two-month window before Israel launches its assault. Prime Minister Netanyahu confirmed in an interview on Tuesday that he is now focused on a comprehensive deal with Hamas that includes the release of all remaining hostages. Blake Sifton, Tel Aviv.
Texas House Democrats and other news reportedly confirming they intend to return to their state after fleeing in an attempt to halt legislative proceedings, which included GOP attempts to redraw congressional districts in the state. Multiple sources confirming to ABC 13 in Houston yesterday the absent House Democrats are returning after they say they feel as if they've accomplished their mission of killing the special legislative session called by Republicans to pass redistricting legislation. The special session expires next Tuesday. News of the lawmakers' imminent return to the state comes On the same day, though, that Texas Senate Republicans were able to get the new congressional maps approved. They must now be passed in the House before the governor can sign them into law. And the strategy by Texas Democrats to leave the state and abdicate their duties in an effort to stall Republican legislative efforts is a strategy they've used before, as recently as 2021. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is seeking to have, meanwhile, former Congressman Beto O'Rourke arrested, as Chris Garagio explains.
According to a legal filing, O'Rourke's Powered by People group continued to raise money to cover the expenses of Texas Democrats who fled the state after a judge temporarily blocked the group from soliciting money. Paxton is calling for a $500 fine for each act of contempt and for O'Rourke to be jailed. Texas Republicans are trying to put maximum pressure on Democrats to return to the state as the GOP looks to pass new maps ahead of 2026. I'm Chris Caraggio.
Some good news on the economy. President Trump may soon get the interest rate cut he's been asking for from the Fed. That's because last month's inflation report is better than expected. White House Press Secretary Karen Leavitt celebrating the news yesterday at
today's
the White House
CPI
Press Conference.
Report revealed that inflation beat market expectations once again, and inflation remains stable.
The Labor Department showing the Consumer Price Index, a general measure of how much people are paying for goods and services, and a key inflation indicator was up 0.2% from June. Many economists say the report should be evidence that Trump's tariffs are not leading to a spike in inflation, and it's now safe to cut rates, possibly as soon as next month. Firefighters are desperately trying to increase containment on three wildfires burning in Rio Blanco County. The Lee Fire continues to burn at more than 120,000 acres and is only 4% contained. But Fire Incident Commander Jeremy Dietz says the crews are still having some success guarding against the flames jumping over a key state highway.
We are looking at areas of opportunity down here on the other side of Highway 13 if anything was to go. So we're doing our scouting down towards Rifle Gap. So getting folks out ahead of this.
The Elk Fire burning 14,500 acres and is 30% contained. The Crochet Fire burning near the Rio Blanco Route County line is now at 300 acres and is 0% contained. Alaska's governor issuing a state disaster declaration over what he fears could be coming catastrophic flooding from what's known as a glacial outburst. It marks the third straight year of serious glacier-related flooding in the capital city of Juneau with the population around 30,000. And the cleanup continuing following severe storms in the Chicago area. Heavy rain moving in through the city yesterday afternoon and then more storms developing into the night. Several homes were flooded. There was also high standing water on the city's south side, with some streets taking on 4 to 6 inches of water, especially in areas with poor drainage systems. And finally, it's still unclear if Tropical Storm Erin will affect the East Coast. The National Hurricane Center says this afternoon Erin was about 950 miles west of the Cabo Verde Islands off the west coast of Africa, with winds at 45 miles an hour. Forecasters expect Erin will become a hurricane, though, over the central tropical Atlantic over the next few days, and the storm could reach the northern Leeward Islands over the weekend, and the Virgin Islands and Puerto Rico may also feel its effects. It's a Wednesday morning, now 13 minutes past the hour. We appreciate your listenership, and I think you'll appreciate some input from the Italians and, of course, from our Lord, more importantly, on why we need to slow down. Il dolce far niente, especially during Ferragosto, August. More on that coming up. Welcome back, Catholic Connection. It is a Wednesday morning. It's August 13th, and I do hope you're enjoying the program today. We enjoy being with you every day here on EWTN, especially our second hour on EWTN's Radio Extra. Listening to Joan talking about this month of August, which is known in Italy as Ferragosto. Actually, it's known quite well across Europe because so many people come to Italy during August because it's a big holiday month for everyone, and they vacation. And the most common place they go is either up in the mountains or along the seashore, and you have plenty of seashore all over Italy. But it's really important for us to think about why we should embrace this idea of il dolce, the sweetness of doing nothing. Il dolce far niente. Deacon Dom and I actually have a little sign in one of our rooms of our little place over in Umbria reminding us of that. And it's very difficult sometimes coming from the United States of America, even though we're FBIs, as I like to say, full-blooded Italians, and to adjust. But it has done so much for our peace and for our relationship with God. I don't know if you heard Joan Lewis in the first part of the program when she was talking about slowing down. Obviously, the heat will force you to slow down. First of all, if you do too much, you're going to get exhausted and you just physically you can't handle it. And so one of the best things to do for your body, for your mind, for your spiritual benefit is to just slow down, okay? It's so important. I don't know if you heard her talk about going for a glass of wine or maybe some nice cold bottled water. Pellegrino is my favorite with that little slice of lime. Or maybe having an espresso to give you a little boost. Whatever you're doing, you will see when you walk through all the different towns of Bella Italia, whether it's a big city such as Rome or Milano in the north, even as busy as Milan is and Rome, you will see people taking time for their aperitivo. Now, that word comes from aperto, which means to open or open. When you see signs that say Domenico aperto, that means we're open on Sundays. You see chieso, that means it's closed. So aperto means open. So this idea of aperitivo comes from the thought of opening your palate and being ready for your meal. But in Italy, it's come to mean time with friends, time to reflect, time to sit and be still. And yes, she mentioned that sometimes they will spend an hour, at least an hour sitting and having a cocktail or maybe a light glass of Prosecco or even just some nice sparkling water. And what do? They sit, they talk, they catch up on the day. And also many times you'll find people sitting there by themselves, maybe just reading or looking around. You'll also see so many people slowly strolling the streets. And you see this a lot even in busy Rome, in neighborhoods like Trastevere, beyond the Tiber River, which is a very, very beautiful area, one of the oldest in Rome. It's my favorite area of Rome. And you see people strolling arm in arm, laughing, talking, dressed very nicely, and just enjoying the evening and enjoying each other. And it's important for us to do that. And unfortunately, in America, I still think we need a lot of work in this area, myself included, even though we spend so much time in Italy. My pastor wrote about this last week in his parish bulletin article. And missing the days of when he was in Italy as a young priest studying for advanced degrees, he spent probably 4 years in Italy living at the beautiful North American College in Rome. But he said it was so great because everybody would slow down, not just during Ferragosto, which he also mentioned in the article, but they would slow down every day. Now, this doesn't happen too often anymore in Rome because of the tourism. It does happen, as Joan said, during Ferragosto in many places because of the holiday and feast day. But Rome has gotten so big and so busy with tourism that you'll pretty much find most places open. But back when my pastor was in Rome, probably that was like 25 years ago. They did still do, of course, Il Dolce Far Niente on a regular basis and have their aperitivo, which they still do. But in terms of slowing down and shutting down, it's not so common in the big cities anymore as it used to be. It's still there, but not as common. But he loved it because he could, so many of the guys he said would take a nap in the middle of the afternoon because that's what you do. And it was interesting, the very first time Deacon Dom and I went to Italy, this is before I was in Catholic Radio, our tour guide in Florence, who was wonderful, and it was like, I don't know, noon, we finished our walking tour of Florence. She said, okay, now I have to go home for riposa and I have to cook my husband dinner. And I'm like, dinner, it's noon. Not realizing that pranzo, or lunch, is the main meal of the day. And they go and they spend time and then they take a nap and then they come back to work afterwards, usually about 4 o'clock. And my pastor was lamenting that so many of us, and for vacations in August or even with Italy, they don't just take 1 or 2 days. They take weeks sometimes. Now, maybe we can't afford, and I'm just not just talking financially, maybe we have too many responsibilities, which is understandable, especially if you have a young family. Maybe we have too many responsibilities to take extended vacations. But we could all certainly revisit the importance of il dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing, especially when it comes to our relationship with God. If you take a look at the verse in the Psalm, Psalm 46:10, it talks about being still and knowing I am God. God is our refuge and our strength, an ever-present help in trouble. Therefore, we will not fear, though the earth give way and the mountains fall into the heart of the sea. Right? Though its waters roar and foam and the mountains quake with their surging, there is a river whose stream makes glad the city of God, the holy place where the Most High dwells. God is within her. She will not fail. God will help her at break of day. Nations are in uproar. Kingdoms fall. He lifts his voice. The earth melts. The Lord Almighty is with us. The God of Jacob is our fortress. Come and see what the Lord has done, the desolations he has brought on the earth. He makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks the bow and shatters the spear. He burns the shields with fire. He says, and this is again Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the nations. I will be exalted in the earth. Now, if you notice, a lot of people are familiar with Psalm 46:10, be still and know that I am God, but they're not familiar with what precedes it in terms of all these verses about things about which we're concerned. Waters roaring, right? We're looking at flooding right now. We're looking at earthquakes. We're looking at all the weather, a possible hurricane coming our way. But we're reminded in verse 9, he makes war cease to the ends of the earth. He breaks a bow and shatters a spear. He burns his shields with fire. Be still, and know that he is God. And I encourage you, a little homework assignment for you today, in addition to pondering that verse, verse 46:10, to think about the importance of il dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing. Now, when you're doing nothing, you really are doing something, because if you're sitting and just slowing down, that means hopefully you're taking a breath and you're reflecting. Just do a search on Google for the importance of reflection and slowing down. You would not believe what you will come up with. There was a really big piece that was published by the Harvard Business School, and this was in 2020, when a lot of us were forced to slow down because of the COVID pandemic. And the author says reflection, and by the way, the author happens to be Italian-American, reflection, the pause that brings peace and productivity. Joseph Badaracco studied classic works and interviewed 100 managers in 15 countries to learn how busy men and women find time for reflection. Reflection is important. It gives us a chance to pause and figure out what really matters, especially when struggling with a difficult issue. We often get advice to reflect, and we often give the advice to reflect, but how busy are we that we don't allow ourselves to find the time to reflect? And they go all the way back to meditations by even Roman emperors on the importance of reflection, which is part of the reason that the, of course, Romans started this Ferragosto, this celebration in August. Now, we dedicate it to Our Lady. But what did Our Lady do? We see so often in Scripture, she pondered. She was able to be still, and she knew who was God. Let us do the same and embrace more often il dolce far niente, the sweetness of doing nothing. We'll be right back. There's a time for slowing down and reflecting, as we mentioned in the last segment. There's also a time to get moving for the Lord. And so we're going to switch gears a little bit here and have you check out liferunners.org. They have a big event coming up from September 5th to October 25th. And the founder of Life Runners, a website is liferunners.org. Our friend Dr. Pat Castle is joining us this morning. Hey, Doc, how are you?
Doing well. God morning, Teresa.
God morning. Yep. So what's new?
Well, you mentioned the big event. I mean, I guess you could say we're in that warm-up. We're all getting warmed up for the largest spanning pro-life event in the world, the Across America Relay for Pro-Life. And it is going to kick off on September 5th, as you mentioned, and some really exciting, piercing the culture locations. San Francisco, in front of just a beautiful light of a church and school called Star of the Sea. Mm. And 90 students are going to take the big Remember the Unborn banner through San Francisco all the way to the Planned Parenthood on Bush Street in San Francisco, 2.6
wow.
miles, like a little, you know, their own March for Life, if you will. So there's the West Arm kickoff, and then the East Arm will kick off from an abortion facility in New York City and go 1 mile to Times Square with three Remember the Unborn banners with a large group processing through New York City, if you can envision that. And then mm-hmm. the North Arm kicks off in Fargo in front of the Cathedral of St. Mary's with Bishop Fulda, and it goes 2.6 miles across the state line of North Dakota into Minnesota to the Red River Abortion Facility with a great public witness. And then lastly, the South Arm kicks off at the University of Texas at Austin, goes across the campus with that great message, again, the big blue Remember the Unborn banner, with a group of life runners really just kicking it off, amplifying the message, and getting this 51-day event, 5 September to 25 October, and it adds up to 5,124 miles, 12 million steps, 1,476 5K segments of people wearing their witness, wearing that royal blue Remember the Unborn shirt, in these little 5K segments, walking or running in their neighborhoods or on the course, making a big cross over America.
Mm. Now let's talk about, you mentioned some of these cities. Boy, you talk about being the belly of the beast, San Francisco, New York, and going to different Planned Parenthood facilities with that beautiful banner. What is it like for those people who do that? What kind of resistance do they experience?
Yeah, it's what a great question. And the good news is, 99% of the responses are positive. So what it does is it draws out the positive aspects of the culture. Mm-hmm. So even in a place like San Francisco, where you think, oh my goodness, we're going to be overwhelmed, you know, culturally by the culture of death. Uh-uh. So the holy remnant that's driving amongst that traffic that sees a big Remember the Unborn banner, they pause, they roll their window down, they give a thumbs up, they honk, you know, wave, because they're like, wow, you know, it's like a scene out of Lord of the Rings when the big eagles show up or the trees,
right.
you know, come in. It just feels like, wow, help is here. So that's 99%. Now, of course, the 1% in such places, you are getting, you know, the you're number one with the middle
exactly.
finger
and
get a real job yelled out. And I'm like, this is my job. This is everybody's job to defend the least of the least. So you get some of that. And then you right. just, you smile, bless, reflect that kind of negative, evil response.
Right. But the end of the day, I know that doesn't matter, because even though people may have a little bit of, you know, queasy feeling in their stomach, so to speak, they're going to do what they need to do, and they need to speak up for life. Let's go back, Pat, to when this all started. You're the founder
sure.
of, you know, this Life Runners of America, liferunners.org. Why did you start this? What prompted it?
Well, the Wayback Machine. I'll take that question all the way back to a race I did. In August of 2006, I did a 13.1-mile race up Pikes Peak Mountain in Colorado. And near the finish of that race, it was highly fogged over, very disoriented, you know, unsafe, you know, as you can imagine, on the top of a 14,000-foot mountain. And in answer to prayer, I had encouragement from St. Padre Pio.
Really?
And it's quite a story. You know, it's quite a story. And listeners can go watch a video and hear about that encounter. And that's at liferunners.org/.
Well, I want to hear some of it now. That's why
yeah.
I asked the question. So we'll go to the website.
yeah. So, but if they want to hear the whole okay. story, it's /STPIO, lifefinders.org/STPIO. But in that, I just kind of, I cried out, Lord, I need help. Like, I'm lost up here, and we have a holy goal, and we've been in this together, training in this mountain all summer. And I had someone behind me give just a real clear voice. We are 10 minutes from the top. We are on pace. We are going to break 3 hours running up this mountain, which about maybe 40 or 50 people out of the 2,000 do this. It was just a desire of my heart. But this encounter later had a lot of precision with the intercession at the exact time. I looked at my watch for this encounter. It was 9:50 a.m. Mountain Time. And I talked to my mother later, and she said, I asked for St. Pio to help you, and I wrote down the time, and it was 9:50 a.m. Did anything unusual happen on the mountain? So, and you're getting a really brief version of this encounter with St. Pio. But as you can see, I mean, the intercession of a mother concerned about her son, me reaching out to God for help, St. Pio, we know this guy loves bilocation. He loves to help people on this side of heaven. Keep oriented towards heaven. And it was just a beautiful thing. I remember saying, Lord, I'm going to proclaim your name from the top of this mountain. And sure enough, me collapse at the finish line, a journalist from the local newspaper, circulation 450,000 newspapers, came up and said, your finish was the most exciting of the day. You were the last person to break 3 hours. Will you give me a statement? And my statement was, with 1 minute to go, I prayed, come Holy Spirit, carry me forth, and here I am. And they put that, a picture of me collapsed at the finish line with me looking up to St. Peter and the clouds, and gave that quote, and then wrote a little article about, 10 seconds of spare. That circulated out, proclaiming God's glory to 450,000 people the next morning when they used to receive their newspaper at their doorstep versus their computer online. Mm-hmm. So praise God. That you asked the Wayback Machine, that encounter got me one step more serious about what would God like to do with running. Mm-hmm. And then the next step was I formed a group that studied the book Unbound by Neil Lozano, which is studying evil in the modern world. We identified abortion as the crown jewel of Satan, the greatest evil imaginable.
Okay, Pat, hold that thought. We're going to get into that more after the break. I want people to stay tuned. This is fascinating because we always talk to you about the beautiful events, but getting to the heart of the matter with Life Runners is huge, and it will give people encouragement to check out your great website for the big event coming up, the big relay coming up in September. Go to liferunners.org. Our guest is Pat Castle, Dr. Pat Castle, the founder. We'll be right back. The website is liferunners.org. The founder, our wonderful guest, Dr. Pat Castle, established in 2008, the world's largest pro-life team with almost, 25,000 teammates who remember the unborn jerseys as a public witness, which is a huge witness. So we were interrupted by the satellite break. I want you to continue the fascinating story of how you identified abortion as an evil, getting together, realizing we have got to do something. So that's what really caused the focus on abortion, correct?
That's correct. And, that holy encounter with St. Pio led to getting a little bit more serious, and that was by way of studying the book Unbound by Neil Lozano, which really talked about how evil works in the modern world. We identified abortion as the crown jewel of Satan, and we went to work in ministry by way of standing in front of abortion facilities as a witness, by way of going to nursing homes, to the ministry of presence, to defend life from conception to eternity. And then Life Runners was born out of that prayer and devotion by way of 12 of us going and running the Chicago Marathon in 2008 to raise funds for ultrasound equipment. Aww. And people saw our shirts that said, remember the unborn on the back and the Trinity on the front, and they said, where can I get a shirt like that? And now what began as 12 of us is now nearly 25,000 of us ages 0.1, meaning babies in onesies that say "Remember the Unborn." Little
I know, I love those.
Teenagers.
They're so stinking cute. I love
that's
those.
That's right. Yep. I gave you one of them to give to a friend or something, right? Or a family member. And I think how cool is it that parents and grandparents will register their little infants, you know, in the spirit of baptism, if you will, to put their faith in action, to wear a little onesie with the Trinity on the front and "Remember the Unborn" in the back. And what a powerful witness for the culture to see a little baby in that onesie. And then we've got people wearing the shirt in nursing homes, in wheelchairs, and all ages, ages 0.1 to 101 officially registered on the team. And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I, you know, you and I talked during the break that running's optional. And maybe a lot of people are at ease where like, oh, running's optional. Maybe people will listen a little closer. Everybody's qualified. We all have to wear something. Why not wear our witness? Mm. And when we're out, whether at the grocery store or going for a walk or the park or to mass, you know, whatever that activity would be, why not wear your witness and impact hearts and minds for changing lives? So I like to quip that the walkers, the non-runners, really are better life runners because you can read their "Remember the Unborn" message easier and have a visit with them because they're not running by. So, you know, walkers feel really comfortable. We've got more walkers than runners, probably 10,000 people that run or are willing to run, and 15,000 people that, you know, are like, hey, I'm willing to do it, but I'm going to just do it at this pace so people can see it, read it, think about it, meditate it, talk about it, start conversations in a grocery store line. Everybody's qualified.
Let me ask you, I want to go back to something you said, which is so important, identifying abortion as the biggest evil. Why? Because a lot of people don't see it that way, unfortunately, even many in the Catholic Church. I mean, for me, you and I were talking during the break that when I think you know my story, when I came back to the church, I did a lot of research and prayer and studying, and I was very pro-choice, and I was in college and in the early years of my career. And then when I started to connect the dots, and I have a whole chapter in this on my book, Extreme Makeover, The Abortion Distortion, I realized how I had been lied to. I realized how abortion is like this giant octopus sucking life out of everything. It impacts so many areas of life.
Yeah.
And you see so many societal ills that can be directly connected to abortion or an abortion experience in terms of maybe helping someone procure an abortion or not being able to stop an abortion. But what led you to determine that this was what the church says, the biggest evil and the preeminent issue, as the bishops remind us?
Yeah, for me, as a PhD nanoanalytical chemist, someone who, you know, I taught biochemistry at the Air Force Academy and at Christian College, at a big public high school, I start with the practical. You know, just like faith, I look out and I say, look how awesome God's creation is. Certainly, God is real. Look what God did. Well, let's look at the practical of abortion and the destruction. Just the ways that children in their mother's wombs are destroyed. They're dismembered. They are starved to death, or they receive a lethal injection. Now, those are the three ways that a child is murdered. I mean, let's define it. Murder and unjust killing. There's nothing just about abortion for that innocent baby. So practically, you start with that horrific reality. But then, Teresa, like you reflected, then we can get a little philosophical. We can look at the other ologies, which I'll give a quick rundown. From the standpoint of philosophy, we know that, you know, first do no harm. From the standpoint of political science, the first duty of the government is what? To protect the people, the opposite of abortion. We look at biology. We know life begins at conception, at fertilization. We look at the standpoint of theology, Jeremiah 1:5, when God spoke to young Jeremiah. This verse is emblazoned on the Life Runner's royal blue shirt. Jeremiah 1:5, God said, Jeremiah, I knew you even before you were in your mother's womb. So when you look at all aspects of the human experience, abortion is a giant red flag. It is wrong at every turn. It's evil at every turn. That would be my response.
It is. I mean, and there's so much, too. If you look at, for example, I remember interviewing Vicki Thorne, the late Vicki Thorne, who was a wonderful pro-life warrior, and she had done an extensive amount of research on men in prison, Doc, about the impact abortion has had on them, that there are so many men who are in prison who either helped procure an abortion with their spouse or their girlfriend or maybe a child, or were denied the right to talk about their baby and stop someone,
right,
their girlfriend or wife, from getting an abortion. And what that did to them psychologically, and the frustration and the anger and the pain and how they acted out. So you think that it's not connected. Well, it's a quote-unquote decision between a woman and a doctor, which is a bunch of baloney, because we all know that the woman doesn't even see the doctor until the abortion. And the
right.
doctors that if they're doctors at all, that still perform abortions, they don't even have to be an OBGYN. They can be a podiatrist, for crying out loud.
Right.
But they're the bottom of the barrel scraping the battle. And so everything that the culture sells us about abortion, it's just the opposite, which is because it's a tool of the devil, and the devil is the great divider and the greatest liar. But it's so important to use this as an opportunity, which is so great what you're doing and continue to do, to engage in these conversations lovingly, because a lot of people just don't know. Maybe by no fault of their own, in this day and age with all the information that's out there, it's kind of hard to excuse yourself for not knowing, but it's still an opportunity for you to share with people the truth about the child and also just about life in general from womb to tomb.
That's right. And from that education standpoint, my favorite aspect of the Life Runners Apostolate in our ministry is reaching the youth. And so over 10,000 of the 25,000 Life Runners are students, kindergarten to college. And we provide free Remember the Unborn shirts for students kindergarten to college to wear at school on the first Wednesday of each month. So if you have any connection, any listeners have any connections to schools, please let them know that we provide free shirts for the entire school, faculty and students, that can get approval through their principal and administration to wear them at school on the first Wednesday of the month. And you can imagine, Teresa, the great impact of those little messengers going out into the world, a child wearing that witness and the great conversations and impact. Secondly, you know, the ministry was started with prayer and devotion. We've got a great devotional that you can pick up on our website, the Life Runners Daily Devotions, and we also have a prayer wall. We will be offering up prayers during every single mile of this 5,124-mile relay across America. Again, starts on September 5th, and it finishes at Benedictine College during their homecoming weekend events on October 25th. How cool is that? Great party for pro-life in that environment of Benedictine College. So get involved at liferunners.org, get a shirt, wear your witness, register for a 5K of the leg, 5K leg of the relay at liferunners.org. Click that relay button, and you can complete those relays in your own neighborhood. Mm. About half the miles, people actually do them on the course, Teresa, but there's an option to click that you're going to do your 5K leg or legs off the course in your own neighborhood. And union with all the Life Runners around the world, which is really cool. That means everyone can participate in the relay.
Absolutely. Liferunners.org is a website, and it's coming up in September, September 5th, and runs through October. All the details are there at liferunners.org, and we're with my friend Dr. Pat Castle, who's been a regular guest of mine, not only here on Catholic Connection, but when I cover the March of Life for EWTN in Washington, D.C. every year. It's so exciting to see him there with his walkers, his runners, all the great people that support him. This is just so important. Do you feel, I mean, I know you're a very positive person. You're so energetic. Do you feel encouraged about some of the great strides we've made under the new administration? Not to get political, but there's a definite a different mood. And although our current president certainly isn't perfect in the pro-life arena, I would still like to see him change his mind on in vitro fertilization, birth control, and these other issues. But at the end of the day, we are seeing the light at the end of the tunnel, and he does not believe, for example, that people should be supporting Planned Parenthood, the taxpayers shouldn't be supporting Planned Parenthood. And of course, there have been other major pro-life and faith efforts that we've seen under this new administration. But in general, what are your thoughts in terms of the mood out there right now?
Right. This was a topic that we discussed this past weekend at the University of Mary at the National Catholic Bioethics Conference, which was just awesome. And we talked about some of these impacts and what's going on culturally. And it is encouraging. It's encouraging that the scaffolding for God and for God's gift of life is getting reestablished in our culture.
It's a great image, great analogy.
Meaning,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's scaffolding. And we know we have so much work now to fill in that scaffolding. But we've had to rebuild, haven't we, Teresa? We've had to rebuild that scaffolding for a culture of life. And boy, has this administration gone to work and rebuilding that scaffolding for what it means to be an American per our Constitution, per the Declaration of Independence. I mean, look at some of the verbiage in those documents, like God-given, self-evident, unalienable. I mean, come on.
And I love the fact that they refer to, for example, Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary, she refers to when she talks about transgender ideology, she doesn't call it life-affirming care, which it's not. It's just the opposite. Just like abortion is not choice, it's murder. She calls it mutilating surgeries for minors. We have to start using that language. We have to use the language. We have to use truth. We're not hiding anything. This is what it is. Abortion is the taking of a life. Why did they call it a termination? Right? Remember the movie Terminator? He was going around killing people. That's why he was called the Terminator. So, you know, don't sit there and tell me this is a health issue or this is choice. It's about death. Death to the to the child, death to the mother, what it does to her heart and her spirituality. But I do feel a sense of, I think people are feeling more freedom. There was a recent law that was passed that allowed people to put out their, you know, their faith in full display on their desks and put out images of the Lord or their faith or scripture verses. That's changed. So I think there's a lot. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. No politician certainly is perfect, but I think we are making real strides. So, Pat, we're out of time. Any final thoughts for those thinking about maybe joining the relay coming up in September?
Yeah, I would say your little sacrifices, your little witness adds up to a big witness. So
you're amazing.
On a shirt. You put on a shirt.
We're out of time. I got to wrap you up, but check out the website, liferunners.org. Your little witness is a big witness. That's a great way to close this segment. Thanks, Pat. God love you, and we'll talk again soon. Liferunners.org. We'll be right back. A beautiful email after my segment in the first hour regarding the Italian connection with St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, whose 50th anniversary of canonization is coming up. This is from Allison. She says, I was very touched by your commentary this morning on your radio show about Mother Elizabeth Ann Seton's connection to the Italian port town of Livorno. As I emailed you earlier this year, we took a Mediterranean cruise that brought us to that port last May. I found it to be a bit rugged, but still a beautiful seaside town. We did not have much time to visit, but since then I've been curious about its possible significance in Catholic culture and faith. I had no idea that it was central to the story of Mother Elizabeth Ann Seton. Listening to your commentary relating her experience there with her daughter and husband was very moving. It gave me goosebumps. I love visiting Italy so much and plan to visit more places there if God will allow. So that's a beautiful email. Thank you, Allison. Appreciate it. And again, if you like to visit Italy and maybe you can't travel right now, get a copy of EWTN's book that just published it for me this year, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, and go online for our mission advancement because they have a wonderful, wonderful programs there, including, and they're all free, my Saints series, all shot on location in Italy, EWTN.com/Saints in Italy. Tomorrow, all about the Assumption, Father Mitch Paca with the history of the dogma. Why didn't we have the dogma approved until the 1950s, we will find out. And then A Revert to the Faith talks about the importance of Mother Mary in his life and his reversion to the Catholic Church. That is my wonderful friend, Chuck Gatica. We'll be back with us tomorrow morning. Have a great Wednesday. God bless you. Ciao, ciao, as we say in Italy.